Welcome to Reinventing You. I'm your host, Danielle Silverman. I believe that in today's world of ever-constant evolution, the only career change that matters is when what you do matches who you are and what you believe. This show is where you'll learn how embracing change and reinventing yourself will help you navigate any disruptions and lead a life of happiness and fulfillment, especially in this ever-changing world. Your purpose and your meaning will drive your personal transformation. As I like to say, it's your vision, your life. Be passionate about it. Reinventing You starts now. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Reinventing You. I'm your host, Danielle Silverman. Reinventing You is a show about what it means to pursue a career and a life that corresponds to who you are, to help you find your purpose and to live it. In the past few episodes, I've been talking about the current state of the workplace and what it means to reinvent your career in a world that's in constant turmoil. But what does the reality of changing your career really look like and feel like? Well, today we welcome someone who has made the courageous leap to change careers completely. My guest, Stephanie Occhiuto, is passionate about mental health. She's passionate about helping others change their lives, and she's worked with Montreal's most vulnerable populations. She's now an educator with Bachelor Youth and Family Centers, where she helps troubled teens that have been through trauma, either neglected, abandoned, physically or sexually abused. You can imagine the difficulty and what it must be like to work with this population. But Stephanie also has, just prior to this, more than 20 years of experience as an entrepreneur of an importer specialty Italian foods. And she has a blog dedicated to taking readers on an educational food journey called thefrugalitalian.ca. Switch or not switch? Stephanie Occhiuto, welcome to Reinventing You.
Hi, Danielle.
Hi, thank you for coming and accepting to be here today. So when we first met, Stephanie, you were working in a job that it was a family business. There was a lot about it that you enjoyed. But what specifically drove you to want to change?
I think there wasn't just one reason. There were a few. But specifically, I felt like I was stuck. I think before I decided to change, I had tried everything possible to, you know, to maneuver. And I was an entrepreneur, and it kind of felt, it felt like I, almost the same way, I mean, you outgrow friendships and relationships, you can also outgrow careers. So that's what it felt. I had tried everything. I had gone back to school, taken marketing classes, writing classes. I had tried to stimulate my career, and when that fell flat, then I knew that it was really time for me to change. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't that I hated my career. I learned quite a bit from it, and it was very fulfilling at one point, but I think it was just time for me to change.
So that's an interesting realization. It wasn't, you know, that you hated what you were doing, but there was something perhaps a little bit more fulfilling that you needed to bring into your life, or, you know, through all the courses that you were taking, you sort of felt like you were trying to figure out what it was that was missing.
Yeah, it felt like something was missing. And because I started, I began the company, I started the company right after my studies. So I think it felt like I needed to go back to roots and go back to basics and go back to what really resonated with me.
Okay. So can you tell us a little bit about the process that you went through to figure out what did resonate with you?
Going back to school definitely helped. Taking classes definitely helped, you know. I knew that I didn't want a marketing career, and I knew towards the end that I didn't want a writing career, because at first I thought that maybe, you know, I wanted to pursue a writing or editing career. But what also helped, I think, was looking through job descriptions.
Okay.
So that really helped me narrow down what ultimately I was going to do and wasn't going to do.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, it's all about blocking outside noise. I mean, like I said, I was thinking of pursuing a writing career, and that was because everyone was telling me how good I was at writing and, you know, that I would make a great writer or editor or copywriter. And that sort of played a little bit with my career choice. And so it was ultimately it was important for me to really like dig down and really like figure out what it is that I wanted to do and stick to my guns and sort of like block out the noise that I was hearing and, you know, not get influenced.
So what did the job descriptions tell you when you were looking at them?
You know, it's funny. Sometimes you look at job descriptions and you don't even look at the job description, and like you look at the salary and you're like, oh, yes. So sometimes it was just like, it was like, oh, okay, the salary is great. I can, you know, have a great life with this kind of job. So maybe I should, you know, look into these types of positions.
Yeah.
But then when I would reread the job descriptions, I was like, no, like nothing just, it didn't feel right.
But
just didn't feel right.
Didn't feel right. But at the beginning, you still tried to pursue some of these positions.
Absolutely. I thought that it was, you know, I think that it was exciting. The change, just the change was exciting. The change in career was a little exciting. So I did want to pursue these careers, but the environment just didn't feel right. I mean, I did get interviewed for a few of these positions, and during the interview, it didn't feel right. It wasn't for me.
Okay. What happened when you would send your CV through to these were positions that you saw online, presumably?
Yeah.
What would happen when you would send your CV in, typically?
It was a challenge. I mean, the job search itself was a challenge. And
what was the challenge about it?
Oh, wow. The lack of responses. I mean, you know, it wasn't like a flat out no rejection, but you know, not getting anyone that would give you time of day was rejection also. So it was like 2 months of struggling to like be seen, you know, and it got very, very frustrating at the end.
What did you actually do to be seen?
A lot of times I had to follow up. So I would send my CV and then I would have to call and follow up and say, hey, hello, you know, my name's Stephanie. I sent in my CV. Have you had a chance to look at it? Do you have a minute to chat? So it was a frustrating process.
Yeah, I hear that a lot.
But also I feel that in these positions where I, like the writing positions, my cover letters were not very exciting. And I think it's because I wasn't very excited about the position, and it came through on the cover letter.
So that's really a very important point, I think, that you bring up, because what you're saying, what I'm hearing you say is that lack of excitement about something is translated in your writing, in your cover letter, for example. And I'd like to point out that it probably is, even if you do get an interview, it's probably very prominent in the interview process as well, because people sense that there's something going on, right?
Your energy is easily, you know, they can sense your energy.
Yeah.
And they can sense lack of excitement and lack of enthusiasm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can fake it as much as possible. But in the end, you know, there's only so much faking you can do.
People sense that your energy is not there. It's not the right thing for you. And how do you feel in those times?
It was discouraging because I was, it felt like I was making an effort that was, you know, just not worth making. It just wasn't worth my time.
Yeah.
And it was time consuming, you know. It's very time consuming to have to research about the company and research about the job position and take the time to interview properly. It's very time consuming, yeah.
Very time consuming. And I assume that you changed your CV for every position that you applied to, or did you not?
Yeah, of course. I had to tweak my CV according to their requirements, change my cover letters.
So hence even more time consuming.
Very time consuming.
Yeah. How long did it take you to figure out that this was not necessarily what you wanted to do? You said you took you 2 months. Was that about how long it took, or what was it?
It took me a few months to realize that it ultimately wasn't for me. Also, my last class at Concordia was a journalism class. And 2 weeks into that class, I knew that really that this career was not for me. So that sealed the deal.
What made that real for you? What was it about that class that said, oh, okay, this career is not for me?
I just didn't feel it, you know. If I had taken a psychology class, then I would be so into it and so interested and so, like, you know, involved in it. And I didn't look forward to the classes. And I mean, I love to learn, so it was a great experience. But it just didn't feel right again. Like, it wasn't for me.
Yeah. And from what I sort of, I'm just putting my phone on do not disturb. So you took these classes, you took many classes in marketing and writing, yeah. Creative writing, journalism. And you still enjoy it because you do still do write. It's more creative writing though.
I love creative writing. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting that you thought that you would be going in a certain direction. And then realized that direction wasn't for you, but it took a few months to come to that realization. What happened at that point?
Like I said, I think I had to dig down and, you know, block the outside noise. Mm-hmm. That's what ultimately helped me. It was a lot of self-awareness. Mm-hmm. It took a lot of self-awareness to realize that, you know, I have to do what feels right for me and not what's expected from others. And, you know, it's also a little scary to do something that's completely different from what you're used to.
Yeah. How did you come to the realization that what you wanted to do was something completely different?
I've always had this passion for helping others, and having worked with the vulnerable population, it's always been so rewarding for me. And so it's funny because, I mean, you know, you don't just have one calling. Sometimes, you know, it's about trial and error, and it's not just a straight line, you know.
No, we think they are.
Yeah, exactly. There are U-turns, there are roundabouts, there's pretty much everything. Stop signs, red lights. So it felt right. Like I thought back of like those times when I was helping the vulnerable populations, and it brought me a lot of joy. And ultimately, that's what I want from a career.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about the process of change that you went through? What, like, how long it took? What were the factors that helped you become aware? Other than just thinking about some of the things that you had done, what else was there?
I had a lot of support. You helped me a lot.
Glad to hear that.
So as I said, it was really like just trying to sit by myself and think of what it is that would ultimately bring me happiness in a career. But it was daunting to say the least, you know, because I think as humans, humans don't like change.
Yeah.
We don't like change. Yeah, we like routines. And when there's a little bit of turbulence, you know, we panic.
So what made you get through that panic? What helped you get through that panic?
A lot of positive self-talk.
Okay.
A lot of positive self-talk, some meditation, and you know, I mean, as I said, careers are not always easy. It's not always easy to find your calling, and it's okay to not know. You know, it's a good thing to try, and mm-hmm. because by trying, you eliminate the things that you don't like and you don't want.
Yeah.
Right. But what helped me is, yeah, a lot of self-talk, some, you know, support from my friends, my family. They were very supportive of me.
That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about the support that you got in the process of working with me. Was there something specific in that process that was helpful or that drove you in a certain direction?
Well, specifically, no, but the questions you were asking made me think, and so sometimes, like, there are things that we don't think of on our own, and sometimes you need that extra help to actually come to a realization. And sometimes we're like, oh, like it's great to hear somebody else's perspective. Because, you know, sometimes we're so like we overthink and we overanalyze and we get into like our own sort of, we're just stuck in our minds.
Mm-hmm.
And you helped me get unstuck. And
oh.
ultimately, that's what helped.
Okay. So getting unstuck means becoming more aware. What does being unstuck mean for you?
Being unstuck means opening your eyes and like just getting out of your mind sometimes. And, you know, like I said, sometimes you would bring in new ideas and you would ask questions and you would probe and be like, oh, I can't answer this question. And it would be frustrating for me, but it would force me to sit and to like come up with an answer.
Yeah. And did you like the answers that you came up with?
I did.
Right. That's the important thing, right?
Yeah.
So there was a process of change. What else, I mean, besides the support that you received, what else was part of this process?
Like I said, a lot of self-care, you know, I had to, you know, it was the transition wasn't easy. It was, you know, it was a very difficult transition. And so I had to do a lot of self-care. I had to, you know, I traveled a little bit and that helped. You know, I did things that, you know, that soothed me. I did a lot of reading. You know, so it was honestly a lot of these sorts of things that you take for granted sometimes, but that can really help.
I think that's really an important message that you give here. As a matter of fact, I think I spent a whole podcast talking about, not the subject wasn't necessarily self-care, but how important it is in order to remain resilient, to take care of yourself. So it'd be really like, so you talked about travel, you talked about reading, you know, those are some of the things that you did to manage that self-care. What are some of the, or was there anything else that you did to help yourself stay motivated?
I had to stay persistent. I had to keep pushing because
okay.
it would have been easy to just give up.
Okay.
So I have to.
That takes a lot of courage and a lot of determination to want to keep pushing. Yeah.
What other choice does one have?
One can just give up.
I guess.
What made you specifically want to continue?
I knew that there was something bigger out there for me. And I was curious to figure out what it was.
I love it. I think that's a fantastic place to actually just take a break. You knew that there was something better for you out there, and you were curious to pursue what it was. Great, great insight. Stephanie, we'll be right back. This is Danielle Silverman with Reinventing You, where we talk about your career. Hello, everybody. This is Danielle Silverman with Reinventing You, talking to you with my special guest, Stephanie Occhiuto, about the major change that she made in her career. When we left off, Stephanie was saying that she knew that there was something better out there for her and had the curiosity to figure out what that was, which I think is an extraordinary gift to have. Extraordinary strength of character and courage to listen inside yourself to, you know, what it is that your mind is telling you, your heart is telling you, there is something better for me out there. You mentioned earlier that you thought back to the times when you were volunteering, helping vulnerable populations in Montreal. What sorts of populations did you help with?
I helped with the homeless population.
Wow. And what was so gratifying about that?
It's a very vulnerable population. And, you know, a lot of them don't have the... A lot of them are just not lucky generally in life, and it's so sad to work with these people, because a lot of them are brilliant and choose this lifestyle for themselves. And it's also a population that's ridden with mental illness and substance abuse, and it almost breaks my heart, because I feel like it's a population that just wants to be heard and just wants someone to speak to. A lot of them are isolated and spend a lot of time alone.
Yeah.
And it's crazy, but just by sitting there and listening to them talk, you can just feel like that they feel lighter, they feel better about themselves. And so sometimes that's all it takes, to just listen to someone. And that is enough to make a change in someone's life sometimes.
Yeah. And you found that as a consequence, though, what did it do to you?
It was very rewarding. It was very rewarding.
Define rewarding for you.
It just made me feel happy. Rewarding, you know, it's just giving back to the community, being able to give back, being able to make a positive difference in someone's life. It feels like that's what most humans should do, but we don't.
It's interesting that you say that, because a lot of the people I encountered today are unhappy in their jobs, and the pandemic has sort of intensified that and made us realize that, well, maybe there are more important things in life than, you know, just working 9 to 5 in a boring job. And people are expressing more and more the desire to bring more meaning into their lives, you know, regardless of what that meaning is, because it could be different for everybody, you know, depending on your values, depending on your beliefs. And what you're expressing is exactly that. It's what you were doing with this vulnerable population is something that was meaningful to you and meaningful to them, obviously, because it helped them. The job that you ultimately went to is a completely different population, from what I understand. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So I'm going to be working with teenagers that have gone through a significant amount of trauma within their primary homes, and have been removed from their primary homes because they have either been sexually abused, physically abused, or have been neglected. And so they're good kids. They're good children that have bad coping skills. What's amazing about working with children is that they have so much to teach us. And so it's going to be interesting to see. And it's also, it's not necessarily a rewarding job because you don't necessarily see how the child progresses from one day to the next. So unless you're able to maintain a relationship with a child for a long time, nobody makes progress from one day to the next. So it's you need to be patient in these kinds of positions. And if you expect for the job to be rewarding from one day to the next, it's not, you're not going to last. So it takes tough skin to be able to work in these kinds of conditions and settings.
Yeah, it's going to be a challenge.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I think ultimately very rewarding, because it sounds like you have that kind of patience.
Yes, very rewarding indeed, in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're playing the long game.
Yes.
I think that's also sort of what you did when you were actually applying for these positions. So I'd like to just switch for a second and go to, because I think the whole process, you were looking for these jobs in marketing, and yeah, it wasn't speaking to you, and you didn't feel comfortable in the interviews. Were you also pursuing other jobs at the same time, or like how did you switch from looking for writing and marketing jobs to going into social service kind of jobs?
It just clicked one day. At one point, when I was looking for a job, the job search was not, there was no movement, I wasn't getting any replies. I was completely discouraged. And at one point I started to see the movement, and I was getting interviews. And that's one of the ways that I was that I filtered it down and narrowed it down to this, because job positions just didn't feel right for me. I just didn't want to sit in an office from 9 to 5 in front of a screen and work. And it felt like I needed to be on the field. And so that's one of the determining factors also.
Mm-hmm. So, what brought you to, well, was this the only job you applied for? How did this come about?
I applied to many other jobs in this kind of field. There are many other nonprofit organizations, some that dealt with women that were sexually abused. And there were so many other jobs that I had applied to. But this one specifically just working with children and working with adolescents really resonated with me. I didn't want to work with an adult population. I had already worked with the homeless population. So this was more exciting for me to be mm-hmm. able to help children.
Tell us about the interview process a little bit.
It was quite lengthy. So it was a 3-part interview.
Okay.
And the last interview was quite intense. There were 3 of us that were being interviewed at the same time, and there were 4 people on the interview panel.
So let me get this straight. You were in one room, 3 people being interviewed, and 4 people interviewing you, panel of judges, if you will. So there were 7 people in the same room.
Exactly.
How did you react to that?
I lost a couple of nights of sleep before.
You knew ahead of time that that's what the situation was going to be.
We were warned ahead of time.
Just to be clear, this is a possible situation. It's not always one-on-one when that there is an interview.
Yeah. So
those who don't know, who've never been through this kind of interview process, it is possible. Mm-hmm. So just off the top of your head, why do you think they do it this way?
I think for them, it might be a way to save time. You know, they get to interview okay. three candidates at the same time. So,
okay. So we were in this room, two other candidates and yourself, four interviewers. What happens then?
So it was a 2-hour interview, broken down into three sort of segments. And so the first part of the interview was, you know, they asked us questions about what we knew about the company, what we knew about the job position. The second part was more about what we thought the skills, what skills we thought were needed to fill the position. And the last part of the interview was more, they would give us a situation and say, how would you deal with this?
Now, did they ask the same question of all three candidates?
No, they asked different questions to each candidate, and even the scenarios were different.
I can imagine that the scenarios would be different for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, information about the company, about the agency, the organization, information about your skill, well, skills would be different. But how would they, you know, would ask one person at a time or?
Mm-hmm. They would take turns.
They would take turns. Oh, the judges would take turns asking a different person a different question. Okay. What do you think made you stand out from the crowd?
I think it was my energy and my excitement. I was, I was looking forward to this interview. Mm-hmm. And I think that my cover letter was very, was good in the sense that I think they read through my emotions on the cover letter itself. And I think they also read through my emotions during the interview. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's not about, getting the interview right and answering each question correctly, but it's more about your personality and your energy and if they think that you're a right fit for the job.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things you've said in there. You talked about the cover letter, you talked about energy, you talked about fit, and excitement as well. About the job. So let's try and break these down a little bit, okay? Because you mentioned energy before as well. What sort of energy do you think you were projecting?
It was very calm, but positive energy.
Okay. So you weren't like jumping up off your chair or anything?
No. But I also felt very comfortable during that interview. I felt confident that I could get the job.
So I'm really curious to know, what is it that gave you that confidence?
Like I said, this is a position that really resonates with me. And so I knew going into the interview that I, even if I didn't have the right answers to all the questions, that I had a good chance of getting in. There was something inside of me just saying, this is right. This feels right.
So you put a lot of faith, if I can use that word, in your gut feeling.
Absolutely.
So it's about that awareness, having that awareness that something is right for you. How does one get there to having that gut feeling?
It takes a lot of time. As I said, it's a lot of trial and error also. It's like children who fit into a circle of friends, but not another. It's the same sort of concept. I'm going to make that analogy because you either feel like you fit in or you don't. And I, for me, I just felt like I fit in. I knew it.
So it's really about being in touch with that awareness, you know, on a regular basis. And there is really no better place to be in touch with that awareness than in an interview, especially an interview of this nature. It's almost a gift, I would say, to have that, that awareness. So energy, the calmness that you said you felt because you knew you were in the right place. And I would imagine to a certain extent that the people who were there interviewing you must also have projected a certain energy that you were probably working off of at the same time.
Yeah.
So what was it about the organization itself that gave you this sense?
They were very kind. I mean, in other interviews, I just felt like I was getting questioned and drilled into, and just, you know, it didn't feel comfortable. And during the interview with Bacha, they were just really nice people. And I felt like they were searching for something more than just skills and knowledge. I felt like they were searching for something deeper than that. I felt like they were searching for the right personality. And so it almost felt like a conversation and not an interview.
And that's what it's supposed to feel like, by the way. It is supposed to feel like a conversation and as if it were natural. So I'm taking a lot of time in trying to dissect this particular interview, but I'm doing it for a reason because I want everybody out there to know that the interview process is not necessarily something scary because you are a fit or you're not a fit. And that fit, that works two ways. It works from the organization's point of view and it works from the candidate's point of view as well. You have to feel comfortable. You have to know that it's a right fit for you, because if it isn't, you're not going to be happy there, period. And what I'm hearing you say is that you responded to the kindness. So initially it was, yes, this is the kind of thing that I want to be doing. I like this population. My passion for it has come through in my cover letter, which, by the way, is also very important. But also you responded to the kindness that you saw inherent in these people who were already working there. And it's as if it corresponded to the kindness that you have inside you. And the sense that you really need to respond so that they understand that you are like them.
Right. It generally felt like all they wanted was to find the right person that would care for these children. And it was really nice to see.
And your caring showed through.
Also, yes.
Extraordinary experience. And I think that there's so much to learn from it. So we're going to continue this conversation when we come back. More from Stephanie Occhiuto about what it means to change your career. This is Danielle Silverman at Reinventing You. See you in just a short while. Welcome back to Reinventing You. This is Danielle Silverman with my special guest, Stephanie Occhiuto, talking about a real flip in careers, which is something you don't see every day, but that does happen. You know, there are countless people who have flipped their careers, changed careers, to something that is so much more meaningful for them. And my guest, Stephanie Occhiuto, is one of those people. Stephanie, we just finished talking about your interview process at Bradshaw Family Services, which really was an experience in itself, in that you were in with a panel with two other candidates, and you stood out from the crowd. You were that light that shone for the panelists, for the interviewers. And it's this uncanny ability that you had to be in tune with your gut and to also understand what it is that they were looking for. I imagine it takes a certain amount of maturity to get there. What sort of advice would you have for people who are trying to change careers but don't feel that they have this kind of connection with their own soul? What could they do to get there?
The advice I have is, I'd like to say that, you know, let's normalize change, you know, let's see it as something normal.
Okay. I love that.
It's okay to try different things, because that's how, you know, that's how you really discover what's right for you, what's not right for you. And sometimes, I mean, sometimes during the interview process and when you're looking for a new career, sometimes you can sense it. Either all the doors are closing on you or all the doors are opening on you. And so it's all about, you know, learning how to navigate and not forcing anything. Because sometimes the more you chase something, the worse it is. And ultimately, the universe has a way of, you know, helping you and guiding you. Mm-hmm. And when you chase, you end up disappointing yourself, and you end up being disappointed. So it's about just letting it, you know, just feeling the flow and going with it.
That's very wise, actually, very, very good advice. Because it's true, when you do, you know, chase something, to use your words, it's sort of like putting a square peg in a round hole. It just won't fit. You know, no matter how hard you try, you just get more and more frustrated. And so you really have to sort of step back and say, okay, it's not working. Why isn't it working? What is it that I could do differently? And it's okay, as you say, change needs to be normalized. I love that expression because, you know, when we talk about reinvention, it's all about the fact that the world is changing at an ever faster pace. So what do? We have to keep up with that. But keeping up with that pace doesn't mean that we have to, you know, change every day. It means being in tune, first of all, with who we are and what we need. And it means keeping what we know works and divesting ourselves of what doesn't work. So when you're trying to put that square peg in a round hole, you have to realize it's not working. So what do we do instead? Right? So you switched from doing something that wasn't working for you to all of a sudden going to an area, a field that where you felt more comfortable, where you felt more at peace, and ultimately this particular organization where you felt even more at peace, you felt it was right. I'm tempted to ask you where else in your life you've felt like that.
Not many places. Not many places. As you say, when you're trying to fit a square peg in a round hole, it doesn't work, you know? So if you don't feel like you fit into an organization, whether it's the culture or whether it's, you know, what you're doing, you get home exhausted. You've done your 9 to 5, but you're not finding any joy or fulfillment. You know, you're going home, you're bringing a paycheck, you're paying your rent, putting food on the table, and just living. But, you know, living has a bigger purpose than just that. So it's important to find something that you're good at, and that you like.
There are other things that you liked though as well, if I remember correctly.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, I discovered that I have a very creative side and that I love to write. And that was a great discovery. And I'm pursuing it. I'm pursuing it on a part-time basis. That, I mean, that's not going to pay my bills, but I am doing it on the side. So I'm going to pursue that.
And it's really important actually to have that other passion. You're referring to your blog, if I'm not mistaken, right? Everybody, you have to look up his blog. It's called thefrugalitalian.ca, because we're in Canada. The Frugal Italian, just the name. When I first heard the name, I was gobsmacked. It was like, oh my God, what a brilliant name, you know, because Italian food is not frugal. It's the epitome of abundance, right? And good cheer and family and you know, just I don't know, it just is happy. And it's filled with not emotion, but it's filled with I can't even find the word, sumptuousness and sensuality and there's
charm.
just and what?
Charm.
Charm, yes, and charm as well, absolutely. So you bring that also. This is part of your personality, and you bring that into your job as well. And it's really important also to understand, I think, for everybody, that you've chosen to continue that because it fills another space. It fills another piece of you, fulfills another piece of who you are. And so we don't let that go to the wayside just because we have a job. There's more to life.
Italian food is part of my essence. I grew up with Italian food. You know, as a child, my dad used to take us back to the village every few years. And it stayed with me, you know, watching my grandmother cook in the kitchen and just filling the house with such wonderful smells.
And you smell.
And so it's part of my essence. Yeah. It's part of who I am.
Yeah. And it's important to stay in touch, for you to stay in touch with that part of who you are.
Yeah.
And hence the wonderful blog, The Frugal Gourmet, The Frugal Italian. Oh my God, what am I do? We know there's a Frugal Gourmet. Thefrugalitalian.ca. But there's other things that you have in your life as well that you enjoy.
Oh, yes. I mean, I'm an animal rights activist. I'm a fur mom, very proud fur mom. I love, if I could, you know, rescue every dog or animal that I saw, I would.
Yeah.
So that's another big passion of mine.
Yeah.
I love to travel. I'm a big book nerd. I am a coffee addict. There's so many things that I enjoy in life, but that I can't make a living off doing.
So it's interesting because you did actually, if I'm not mistaken, look at all of these things when you first started trying to figure out what your next step was going to be. All of these things were on the table.
And the doors kept closing.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, but first of all, they were on the table. They were, you allowed yourself to even think about these things.
Absolutely.
And I think that's important. Because I think if you had shut the doors first, what would have happened? You might have had regrets later on. Oh, why didn't I pursue that? Right? But instead, what you did was you said, okay, I like all of these things. Let's figure out which one I'm going to fall in. So how did that choice happen?
Oh, well, maybe it was just the wrong timing. I mean, maybe this is something that I'll pursue in 10 years from now or in 5 years from now. So as I said, sometimes it's all about, you know, timing. But right now, what felt right was for me to work with children. It was bigger than working with animals. I've adopted animals, so I know that I'm doing my part. So it just, like I said, I did what felt right for me right now. But, what feels right for me now doesn't mean that it's going to feel right for me 10 years from now or 5 years from now. So. Mm-hmm.
And that's a very important point as well, because, having a career for life these days doesn't exist anymore. As a matter of fact, it's not necessarily a right, because organizations change over so fast. Change in general is extremely fast. Things happen that are beyond our control, war, pandemic, all kinds of things. And we have to sort of constantly be in tune with who we are and what we want. I think that's the first step in being able to, you talked about, we need to normalize change. Well, how do we normalize change? Any ideas?
We need to be resilient.
Could be resilient.
We need to be adaptable.
Yeah.
We need to be flexible.
Yeah. And I think we need to truly know who we are. Mm-hmm. Because, to make it through any change that happens, what grounds us is this absolute knowledge that of who we are, when what we need from any particular situation. So what's your next step now that you've landed this job? What do you think is in front of you?
A very challenging career, a very challenging position. As I said, it's not an easy job to work with these children. And they don't necessarily do a 180 change quickly. So it's going to be challenging, but I'm ready for it. I've prepared myself mentally. I know what I'm getting myself into. It's exciting for me. I'm looking forward to it.
What is it that you're looking forward to in particular?
I'm looking forward to learning from these children. I'm looking forward to interacting with them. I'm looking forward to helping them.
Yeah.
Helping them cope with their emotions and deal with their anger and all of that stuff.
Yeah. Now, we don't know what the future will bring, but how do you think that will change you?
I feel that when you work with children, you turn into a softer person. Like, even if life hardens you for X, Y, Z reason, working with children has a way of making you softer and seeing the world from a different perspective. I'm sure they're going to change my life for the better, and they're going to make me a better person.
That's amazing, Stephanie. As if you weren't already a good person, a better person. So, in the meantime, you haven't started the job yet. In the meantime, what are you doing?
I'm helping out at my dad's specialty cheese shop here in Montreal.
Cool.
Yeah. Still with specialty Italian foods. It's fun because I get to educate people. I get to suggest products.
Yes.
So it's a nice environment also.
It's a beautiful environment. Actually, I went to visit there. I fell in love. Really, it's a lovely shop.
Yeah,
the energy in it was also quite beautiful, and there were some amazing things. So thank you for that. For anybody who's living in the Montreal region, it's called La Baie des Fromages on Jean Talon East, the corner of Papineau. I think along with your blog, thefrugalitalian.ca, well, first of all, Montreal has a very large Italian community. I think it's probably the largest ethnic community in Montreal. just like 300,000 people or something like that, if I'm not mistaken. So there's very, very rich culture. There's a lot of that warmth, that heart that comes out that you've probably inherited that is going to be incredibly helpful in the job that you undertake, working with kids. So what I'm hearing, Stephanie, is that your life has a purpose to it now. It has a purpose in that you're doing something that you know will be helpful to others. And by the way, what you're helping a particular population, but it could easily have been another type of population. And for somebody else, it could have been something completely different. It doesn't matter. What matters is that the purpose matters to you. The meaning matters to you. So for everybody out there who's in a job that they don't enjoy and who is looking for more meaning, what sorts of things would you advise they do?
A lot of introspection. A lot of introspection, and blocking out outside noise. And, you know, a lot of parents put so much expectations on their children. There's so much pressure on them to succeed and to become doctors and this and that and have all of these, like,
yeah,
or whatever it is that, you know, they want their children to be. But ultimately, like, you can't live a life for your parents. You need to live a life that's true to you. And who better to know than yourself, right?
Yeah.
Live a life that's true to you.
That's true to you. And you know what is really extraordinary in this instance is you were in the family business. And sometimes, you know, family can be very, they can hold on to you and say no or get upset if you want to leave. But you were lucky they were there and they supported you in your desire to change. So I think it's also a testament to you, probably how you presented it to them and the, you know, the love that exists within the family. It isn't always easy, but I think your advice is right on, you know. Figure out who you are, what is right for you. And for those who don't like doing a lot of introspection, there are ways. There are ways you can do it. Any final words you'd like to add, Stephanie?
It's been great working with you, Danielle. For anyone looking for a coach, Danielle is fantastic. You've been very supportive. I encourage people that want to try different career paths and to change.
Yeah.
I encourage them to pursue what feels right for them. And if they fall down, to get back up. You know, life doesn't end there. There's That's always right. something.
That's right. You know, there always is something. Thank you for that, whatever you call it, that positive feedback. But I was in the same situation you were in once as well. And I realized that I needed to help people. And my way of helping people is helping them in their careers, because I had been through so many terrible experiences in my career. I didn't want that to happen to anybody else. So your story is very inspiring. I hope it will inspire our listeners as much as it has inspired me, and that you can continue to shine your light on the children that you're going to be helping. Stephanie, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. And I look forward to hearing how you evolve.
Pleasure was mine, Danielle.
Thank you for listening to Reinventing You. This is Danielle Silverman with my special guest, Stephanie Occhiuto. Don't forget to go and visit her blog, thefrugalitalian.ca. Until next time, have a wonderful holiday season, everybody. Thank you for listening to Reinventing You with me, your host, Danielle Silverman. Tune in on the second and fourth Monday each month at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Join me and feel inspired and optimistic about your future. We only get one life, so embrace change and thrive with me. Find work that aligns best with your soul and what you enjoy. For more information, go to reinventingyou.com.